Hi, Aaron. It's Bob on Peaks Island, Maine, and on my right is Dr. Abe Peck, and I have a group of wonderful people of all ages and backgrounds. I guess there's probably maybe 16 of us here. The subject of Holocaust museums is being discussed and debated and thought about. So, Abe, take it away.
Hello, Aaron. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
You're a curator, yes?
Yes.
Okay, at the museum. Well, I'm going to ask you a question, and, you know, hopefully you can reflect on it, not necessarily only in terms of your professional work as a curator, but just in general in terms of Holocaust museums and education. You know, what I've always wondered, being a son of survivors and looking at the history of the various museums, whether they're in states, in cities, or the national ones, to sustain Holocaust museums in the future, you're going to need a couple of things that will no longer be available as they are today, namely this extraordinary generation very quickly that we're losing of survivors.
Mm-hmm.
We're down, you know, very much now to hidden children who are passing away.
Yeah.
And whether, in fact, the concept of the Holocaust can comfortably accommodate the issue of other genocides and what they bring to the table and what lessons we might be able to draw from them in terms of, you know, the comparativeness of the Holocaust as well as its uniqueness. So the idea of bringing in previous generations of genocide, if you will, who can be allies, both in terms of individuals, fundraising, materials, you know, artifacts. And secondly, the question of what happens when the survivor generation is no longer there to be voices of moral authority. Who is going to take the mantle of that? And is it going to be the second generation or the third generation? And if so, you know, how can we pretend to be voices of moral authority when, you know, the experience is ours only through memory, spoken memory?
Mm-hmm.
So, if you wouldn't mind, in 1 minute, commenting on both of those.
Just 1 minute? It took you like 7 hours.
Well, I'm slow-witted. I'm sure you're much brighter.
Said like a true Maine girl.
Well, I mean, I think all Holocaust museums at some point are going to have to address the issue of other genocides, either those that occurred before the Holocaust and those that have occurred since. Mm-hmm. And I know we are already doing that in every aspect of what we do, whether it's we have speakers, you know, exhibits, even in our permanent exhibit and our teaching trunks and the outreach that we do and the trainings that we do for teachers. I mean, it has to be you know, interlaced with everything that we do. I don't think that it necessarily needs to be compared with the Holocaust in terms of, because as you said, the Holocaust is very unique, but of course those things that make it genocide can't be ignored when you talk about either the Holocaust or, you know, Rwanda or Armenia, whatever. So as far as that goes, I just think it has to be there no matter what. And I don't think all Holocaust museums or centers are doing that. I think it depends on kind of the legacy of who is still running it versus, like, being survivor-led versus an organization that's maybe led by the next generation. And then as far as what happens when we're, you know, when we're no longer have survivors, of course, you know, there's the video testimonies that a lot of centers are doing and the Shoah Foundation's doing. I know we do video testimony. We also record our survivors when they speak to school groups. But also to find survivors of other genocides, you know, more modern-day genocides to come and speak as well, because they're that example of, you know, humanity, when humanity fails and, you know, the persecutions they've experienced that is still very different than what was experienced during the Holocaust, but it's still similar lessons.
My name is Peter Melaranio. I lived for a while in St. Pete there, and I've never actually been to the museum. How many museums are there around the country?
From what I understand, Florida has really almost the highest number of centers or museums just within the state.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, this is Joel Eastman. I'm a retired USM history professor. Now, what was your major? I'm curious.
My undergrad is art history, of all things, and my graduate degree is in museum studies.
Okay. So you followed a traditional path, and did you feel prepared for this job by your education?
Well, because of this individual museum, I didn't have a lot of Holocaust or history-specific courses in my undergraduate career, but because this museum has a large focus on art, of course it's art about the Holocaust and other genocide, I felt fairly comfortable coming in. I've been here for 7 years in a number of different positions, and so by now I feel very comfortable.
That's wonderful. I'm very proud of you.
Hey, Aaron, it's Megan Voller from Creative Loafing. How are you?
Oh, hi, how are you?
Hey.
Good to talk to you.
Likewise. I was actually going to ask you something similar, which is, why does your museum focus so much on art? Do you think that makes the subject more accessible to people?
I absolutely do. I think that there's certain people that operate or learn very well through visuals or through creative expression versus, some sort of documentary image or reading text. And I've seen it with my own eyes with student groups coming in, and they just, some children and groups, they just come alive when they see something and they can enter into a discussion where they wouldn't necessarily on our first floor, which is our core exhibit about the Holocaust. You know, they go into these art exhibits and they have a dialogue, whereas downstairs they're just listening. And they might answer a question or two that are prompted by their teacher or their docent or somebody that's with them, but they don't really have this really dynamic dialogue about what they're seeing and the feelings that are being expressed within the art. And I see that with every exhibit that we have of art about the Holocaust or other genocides.
Hi, my name is Frank Rodriguez, and I'm also proud of you.
Why, thank you.
How do you find artists to display in your museum, or is there a network that is accessible to you or others?
Well, there's one of two ways that pretty much most of our artists have come to us. One is, they find out that we exhibit art, or just the fact that we're a Holocaust museum and they create art about it, so they send us their portfolio and we will review it with a committee and decide that way. But also, we had a great curator of art that was contracted with us named Stephen Feinstein, and he was a huge resource. He seemed to know every artist that there was that dealt with the subject, and every, that fit our museum and our mission. And because of that, at least for the last 7 years, and I know before that, we've had some amazing exhibitions.
Hello, Aaron. This is Mark Tipton. I'm a musician. Bob wanted me to tell you about just a couple months ago, I wrote a score for the 1920 Paul Wegener silent film called The Golem. And it was an incredible project, and I came out of it feeling so connected to someone who has survived maybe not a genocide, but certainly a fascist government and a certain kind of oppression, that I felt that there was a distinct need to have more outreach education in public schools and in general, talking about and creating a dialogue about genocide and about oppression. So I just wondered what exactly the museum is doing in terms of outreach in the here and now.
Well, we do regular teacher trainings where teachers come to us. That way they are able to go back to their classrooms and teach the Holocaust and other genocides. So we have teacher trainings that are specific to certain subjects within the Holocaust, and then we've had teacher trainings on Armenia, on Rwanda, on some of these other unfortunate events, to say the least. And then we also have something we call teaching trunks, and they're literature-based trunks that are basically everything a teacher needs to teach a unit or on the Holocaust, but we also have teaching trunks that are human rights and genocide specific, and then we also have another set of teaching trunks that are focused on art about the Holocaust and other genocides. So we have those. We also have traveling exhibitions that go into other museum sites, libraries, and schools. We have 70 teaching trunks in the building right now because it's summer. As soon as school starts, probably within 2 weeks, those trunks are going to be empty, and they're empty until the end of the school year. And what happens is they go, a teacher requests it, they get them, and then they share them with other teachers in their school. So, you know, for instance, when we have our summer institute, and we do, you know, we have, summer we had 40 teachers. Well, each one of those teachers go back and they have at least one classroom of 30, if not, you know, several classes where they reach hundreds of kids. And that's just during the one school year. And that is above and beyond the school groups that come in here, which is about 150 per school day.
My question is, I don't know about in your museum or in other Holocaust museums, is there some kind of a summary, or is that a simplistic idea? When you get to the end of the museum, if you've been through this, if you've had an emotional experience, not the kids who are there with teachers and discussion groups, but if you're a normal person going through the museum, do you get to the end and have a list of books, a list of resources, people you can call, organizations you can join? Is there a thing that says, don't just walk out of here? Take something away with you, and if you're disturbed by it, here's what you can do.
You know, actually, we don't have anything like
well,
that.
Well, this is
an idea, see? I mean, we have the end of our exhibit sums up with a section called Lessons for Today, which talks about acts of hatred, current-day acts of hatred and other genocides since Armenia forward. And then it also, you know, it ends with some inspirational quotes about, you know, what you can do to change the world or to make things better, to be an upstander. And, of course, we have a memorial room similar to some other sites.
Hi, Aaron. My name is Paul Jabornstein from Maine. And I had a question. We had talked earlier about the connections that people in the concentration camps made with each other, and how there was strong connections and support between them. And I wondered if any of your artists or exhibits in the museum touch on that part and not just the quote-unquote evil side of what happened in the Holocaust.
For instance, there's one artist who's a survivor named Michael Smuss. And he has a couple of different works that focus on his friendship with another camp prisoner and sacrifices that that person made for him. And Samuel Bach, while he wasn't in a concentration camp per se, he has a whole brand new series coming out about a relationship he had with another boy that lived in the ghetto with him, and that this boy didn't survive, but he did. So we do actually have a lot of artwork that focuses on that, and we also have some history exhibitions. That kind of subject is featured in some history exhibitions where, you know, where are these people that, you know, did something to help out another person that they were with, because rescuers were not just Gentiles, but were also fellow Jews. We always try to find, even though, of course, the subject is not very pleasant, especially for some people who are more sensitive, we always try to find something that is that glimmer of hope for someone.